Hey everybody, welcome to the Toncast. This is a very special guest, Todd Robert Anderson, no host this week. I'm breathing hard because I just finished a workout called Plyocide, very dark name for a workout. It's part of P90X2, a desperate attempt at 41 years of age to get in shape. I don't think my entire life I've ever been in great shape. Certainly never looked like a Ryan Gosling ab-wise or muscle-wise or attractiveness-wise. But I do demonstrate more emotion, I think, in my face. So my face is in better shape, I think. But in any event, that's why I'm sort of breathing hard. And, you know, I'm trying to squeeze this in before going to see a movie, before going to an audition. I have a late afternoon, Friday afternoon audition. It seems like these days all my auditions are either on Saturdays or at the end of the day on Friday. So either my Saturday is ruined or I have to spend 4 hours in LA traffic because Friday rush hour is always worse than all the others. I'm not complaining. It's great to get the auditions. It's just strange that the timing is always like, why not Friday midday or something? I don't know. I mean, I guess they take lunch in the middle of the day. But you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to complain. I apologize that I've been unable to book a host, but I have good news in that the very next episode of the Toncast will have a host. Her name is Susan Tankersley, and she, lives far away from me. I talked to her. I haven't actually talked to her, but we've emailed and Twittered all that stuff. And she listens to the pigs and comments and listens to this and comments and so I'm excited to have her. She's recording questions. I'm not even going to pretend that it's something that it's not. She's going to record questions and then I'm going to answer them. Which seems like a fun way to do a remote interview because as I've tried Skype twice in the past and learned that Skype just sounds like shit. And honestly, I don't have time to do a remote interview where we, you know, both record things, and most people don't have, this kind of setup. So, she's recording it on whatever device she's recording it on. And I'm going to just answer the questions and it'll be fun. She sent me a couple test questions and a test introduction, and the introduction question is very funny. She's funny. She's a funny lady. So I look forward to that, and you should look forward to it too. That'll be next week. You know, in an effort to, keep content coming for all my listeners, of which there's two, maybe three. And I appreciate you guys more than you could possibly know. But I wish there were more of you. Maybe not, because, you know, I say stupid things on this and it's potentially embarrassing. In any event, thought I would, I wrote a blog entry. I also write a blog. There's so many things that I do, that so few people pay attention to. I don't know. Is it insane? I know I talk about this all the time, but is it insane that I keep, probably insane that I keep talking into microphones and writing things and videotaping myself and making sketches that so few people I mean, I have friends, you know, friends who are like, hey, what are you doing? And I tell them what they're doing. They're like, oh, that's awesome. And then, you know, they don't listen. I don't know if they immediately forget or they're like, no, I'm just not into podcasts and I'm not into YouTube videos and I'm not into, I just want to watch Vegas, which I will be on soon. I'm not sure when. I should look that up, try to figure it out. Last time I looked it up, my episode hadn't been posted on the schedule, the CBS schedule yet. So, I mean, I'm assuming I don't get cut out. You know, it's just one sequence. So you never know with those things. You know, so those of you who, you know, refuse to look at me in any way without a giant production value and budget, there's at least a bit on Vegas coming up. And maybe you'll catch me in a commercial or something. But for those of you who don't mind low production value, welcome. Thanks for coming to the Toncast. I actually, it's funny because my son, who's seven, he has seen a lot of the videos that I've done that are appropriate. I do a series of YouTube videos. I do one a month these days, called The Web Show of Todd. And sometimes if, you know, I think it's something that'll tickle him, I might show it to him, but I tend to shy away from cursing on those. So there's at least something I can point to other than commercials that he can see. And although there's a lot of fucking cursing in the movie Blast from the Past, which was my very first theatrical job, if you have listened to this podcast or, the Film Pigs podcast, you might be aware of that. But my first theatrical job was in a movie called Blast from the Past. Small character, sort of a end of second act, third act kind of guy who's there to basically facilitate the happy ending. I'm a stockbroker and I analyze stocks and tell the main characters that they're rich. And that's the only way to be happy is to be rich. So therefore, happy ending. My wife and I decided it's rated PG-13. Okay. But it's not rated PG-13 for horrible violence. See, it's hard as a parent and I've gotten in arguments with friends of mine who are oddly paranoid that if the rating system is removed from the hands of Hollywood, because it's not a legal requirement that they rate their movies because of the freedom of speech and all that. So the government's not involved. It's a Hollywood organization called the Motion Picture Association of America, and they rate the movies. They give them the G, PG, PG-13, R, NC-17, or X ratings. I don't really think they deal in X ratings. I'm sure they don't you don't need to look at pornography and go, well, that's not art, so it's an X and not an NC. They probably just watch the regular movies. Although it'd be fun, you know, to sprinkle in some porn. I'm sure it gets boring watching bad movies all the time and trying to decide what's appropriate for children and what isn't. It's kind of arbitrary. So as parents, obviously, but this is the thing, it seems like a giant waste of money if they're not actually doing a good job of rating the movies, because, you know, the PG-13 and NC-17, both those ratings muddy the fuck out of the waters as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you've got, you know, in the especially PG-13, NC-17 sort of has confused people about the R rating, I think. And so now, you know, more often than not, when I'm in an R-rated movie, there are children there. And to me, that's like, no, it doesn't. Just because it's not NC-17, where they won't allow anyone under 17, R is anyone under 17 must be accompanied by an adult. But if you're watching, let's say, a Final Destination movie where teenagers are being eviscerated in various ways, and you bring your 8-year-old kid to it, just because you're sitting next to your 8-year-old kid doesn't make that better somehow. You should not. Those are exploitation entertainments for adults only. And when you're talking about 16, 17 year old kids, you know, then, okay. But just because you're sitting next to your mom or dad while you're watching something horrible happening doesn't, you know, I mean, it doesn't make it less horrible or and it doesn't affect you differently just because your dad's there. It's ridiculous. So the NC-17 has confused the R rating in that way, I think, because parents are like, well, it's not NC-17, it's just R, so that's okay. I mean, come on. Come on. It boggles my mind how dumb parents are, but it also boggles my mind that we continue to allow Hollywood to do this nonsense rating system and all in the name of keeping the government out of it. I mean, if Hollywood wanted to actually be responsible to parents, to help them, to guide them, to make them understand. The PG-13 rating, when it was introduced in the 80s, they were like, well, you know, maybe Gremlins and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is too intense for smaller children, which I totally agree with. But what the PG-13 rating has done has made it easier for filmmakers to make R-rated choices, but because of this arbitrary system of bullet points where they're like, well, they only say fuck once, so it's PG-13, and there's no a graphic sex scene, so it's still PG-13. But if you look at The Dark Knight Rises, which is or the Dark Knight or any of these Batman movies, they're goddamn R-rated movies. I'm sorry, but anything where there's torture, children being held at gunpoint. I mean, if you don't see their head blow up, does that mean, oh, well, it's more acceptable that way? I mean, come on. It's fucking aggravates me. And it aggravates me when I get in arguments with people who are like, well, we don't want the government to get involved because of censorship. And then suddenly, you know, you got all these right wing people. It's like, okay, I understand that. No, you don't want right wing people saying, you know, but it's not about the rating system shouldn't be about censorship. It should be a guideline for parents, and Hollywood is sucking it up, and they always have. They're doing a terrible job of it, an awful job of helping parents figure out what's right and what's wrong. And yes, the other argument is that it's on the parents' shoulders to make good choices for their children. And I totally agree with that. If a parent is dumb enough to take their kid to Freddy versus Jason, when the kid's only, you know, 7, then fuck you. Fuck those parents. But at the same time, fuck the rating system for making it so muddy and indecipherable if you're a parent that the only way to know for sure whether a movie is appropriate for your child is to see it first, which is goddamn expensive. You know, and let's be honest, the PG-13 rating wound up not being about protecting children and helping parents keep their children out of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, but rather made it easier for Hollywood to sell movies like that were once rated R and horrifying for parents to bring their kids to. It makes it more palatable just because it's got a PG in it instead of an R. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just, it's an irresponsible choice. We need to revert back to G, PG, R, and X, because that was simple, you know, and PG, they got away with plenty of stuff back then, but it's not what it was. It's not that, like, PG movies that have gone a little too far get the PG-13. It's not that. It's now R-rated movies that don't go quite that far. So it's just confusing to parents. Part of me wants to just organize a nationwide boycott of films until they fix the rating system. If you have children, don't go to the goddamn movies, you know, unless they're cartoons. I mean, unless they're cartoons, I suppose. But even then, it's like now they got that which was G is now PG. They got some pretty racy humor and pretty violent imagery in their PG, in their Ice Age movies now, which is, you know, it's fine. I mean, my kid can handle it, but, you know, smaller kids maybe not. And it's confusing because cartoons look like something you take children. All I'm saying is it's a broken system and it needs to be fixed. And I'm not saying the government should jump in, but if Hollywood doesn't, I mean, I think actually Obama said this at one point, if Hollywood doesn't, you know, start working it out and doing a better job, then the government will ultimately get pushed to by parents who give a shit about their kids. So message to Hollywood and those who are afraid of the rating system going into the hands of government and therefore creating censorship, maybe what you should be doing is trying to fix the rating system. And remember that it's not about censorship. It's about a guideline for parents. And yes, parents are responsible for what their kids see, but goddamn, it's hard to figure it out if you haven't seen the movie first. That said, my wife and I decided it was okay, now that he's seven, to show him this PG-13 comedy, which has humor involving drugs, and it has a lot of cursing, because the whole movie's about a kid who's grown up in a fallout shelter, and then from the 60s, and then he grows up and the 90s are happening, and it seems like a mutant world to him. I mean, that's the joke. So there's like a lot of off-color humor in there, in this new world that a person from the 1950s and 60s couldn't possibly understand. But we decided to show him. I don't know. I just ranted about the rating system. And the whole reason I wanted to tell you is because we were watching this movie with movie stars and it's high production value. And every time he saw me, you know, in these brief bits, he would go, oh, dad. And it was more exciting for him to see me in a movie with high production value than it has been to see, you know, me and the other stuff that I do, web series and whatnot. So that was both fun and somewhat depressing, actually, because I'm not going to complain about my career. You know, to hell with it. I mean, I've made money as an actor. A lot of people can't never get there. But it was a thrill to see him be thrilled. And if only there were more, you know, larger parts in appropriate movies that I could show him, that would be neat. But that's just not the case. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Of course, these days, like I say, you know, he loves Transformers, but he can't go to a goddamn Transformers movie. You know how violent those things are? Those are so ludicrous. They're based on children's toys, and they're too violent for a seven-year-old. As a parent, I can't take my kid to Transformers movies, and I would like to. I don't care about the narrative or the quality of the movie. He'd just be excited to go see it. But I, as a parent, cannot bring him to a Transformer movie because there's torture and horror in those movies that children should not be exposed to until they're at least tweeners. You know what I'm saying? And you can call me a conservative, but as a parent, I guess in that way, yeah, I'm a goddamn conservative. So suck it up, liberals. That's just how it is. My kid is being raised open-minded. He's being open. He's open-minded. He doesn't bat an eye at homosexuality or different races. That none of that stuff, it like freaks him out, or he very rarely says inappropriate things that would be offensive to people of different religions, sexualities, races, creeds, all that crap. But I'm conservative about what movies I'll show him, mostly because of the violence. But also, you know, misogyny. You know, sometimes, you know, I make the mistake and go back and watch a 1980s movie that's rated PG, and, you know, the objectification of women in some of those movies is kind of unconscionable to show a child. So I've made my mistakes. You make your mistakes, and ultimately he'll be exposed to these things. So it's kind of good that sometimes there are these inappropriate things that we can talk about. And so he understands, okay, that's inappropriate. This is a movie that made irresponsible choices. It doesn't mean it's not an entertaining movie or whatever, but that's not the way I'm going to treat those people. I said those people, and that sounds wrong, but you know what I mean. There aren't those people. That's what I'm saying. I'm raising him not to see those people. They're just all people. But in movies, they tend, especially if you go back in time, they tend to make jokes about, there's a lot of, I mean, the 80s is filled with homophobia. You know, the word fag is thrown around almost as much as Tarantino throws around the N-word these days. And yeah, I said the N-word. I'm sorry. I put it in your head. And fuck me for not taking responsibility for talking about it, just saying the word. But I'm not going to. I don't know. I don't know. Don't get me started about Django. I'm weird about Django. I mean, it's like, I'm weird about Django. I have a thing. I think there's a lot of entertainment value in the movie, and maybe that's a little bit what creeped me out about it, is I did enjoy at least the shootout violence. I did not enjoy watching the, you know, torture and, you know, dragged out killings of African-American slaves in that movie, because that's unpleasant, and it was shot very realistically. But at the same time, when the revenge stuff was happening and white people were being killed in a cartoonish way, and that juxtaposition left me feeling icky. But, you know, that was fun. I mean, I kind of enjoyed that nonsense. Even when the movie stretched out way too long and Tarantino, and spoiler alert, guys, you know, if spoilers ruin a movie for you, then you've got a problem, because honestly, it's not about the reveals and what it's about, how the story unfolds and how it's told. If you know it's coming to some degree, it can kind of ruin the experience to a degree, but if it ruins the entire experience, then the movie's a piece of shit. I'm sorry. How many movies have you seen that are based on books that you've read, or stories that you just know, or remakes of movies that maybe you enjoyed? And you know the story, but so there, the whole thing has already been spoiled, but yet you enjoy the movie because the story is told well. So anyway, if you haven't seen Django, you know, hit the button, you know, the 30-second fast forward button till you get to the end, if it bothers you that much. But I mean, honestly, the movie stretches out too long, and there's this whole, you know, thing at the end with Australians, one of which is played by Tarantino, and when it gets to the actual violence in it, I mean, that was a long scene with talking and blah 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 blah, and whoa, how did this movie get derailed? But then there's like this explosion of violence, which is very humorous and disgusting, and I like that stuff. But because it takes place in this 3-hour movie about slave, I don't know, it just, the whole thing is just left me with an icky feeling. And that's not to say the movies doesn't have entertainment value. I mean, I guess that's what I'm saying, is I was entertained, but then when I walked out, I was like, man, maybe I shouldn't have been entertained by that. Maybe I'm racist. That's, I don't know. That's how that movie made me feel. It was weird. And again, I say that it's not without entertainment value, but maybe it's an irresponsible film. I don't know. I don't know. I know more about the movie than Spike Lee. And Spike Lee, you know, made his statement about not going to see it. But Spike Lee, you know, whether his answers are right or wrong about movies, he doesn't show his work. But I have shown my work. And I think maybe, despite the fact that he hasn't shown his work, that on this one, he's right. I don't know. That's a very unpopular thing, and you get in a lot of trouble these days with hipsters if you say, yeah, actually, I kind of side with Spike Lee on this one, but I only side with him because I saw the movie and I had my visceral reaction to it. And I think that's fair. And I'm not saying Tarantino's a bad movie maker or anything like that. I think maybe some mistakes were made in the execution of this film. That's what I'm saying, both narratively and sociopolitically. Okay, let's just say that. Okay, so that's enough about Django Unchained. Why did I go off on Django Unchained? I don't even remember. I've lost the whole thing. Oh, I don't. That's the thing. When there's no host, I just ramble and I get lost. It's like Greg Proops, but not funny. Just like boring preachy parts. I don't know if you listen to the Proopcast. I enjoy that program. Anyway, I figured I'd take this time. I wrote this blog entry. It's like tangential. It's like I'm high, but I'm not. So I wrote this blog entry about going to Disneyland. I went to Disneyland with my kid the other day. And by the way, I'm in a writer's group. I actually wrote it for my writer's group, but then I posted it as a blog because it was an assignment, because, you know, they wanted me to write my life story and 2 pages. And I've already, I don't know why I'm telling you this. The writer's group has been in 12-week cycles, and every time it begins, you know, there's new people and everybody writes their life story, a 2-page version of their life story. This is the third time I've done the assignment, and I'm always trying to come up with new ways to you know, house my life story. So this time, because I just went to Disney, I made it about my history at Disneyland. Of course, I called into my writer's group and said to my writing teacher that I was sick on Monday when I wasn't. I went to fucking Disneyland. And I could be outing myself right now and getting a lot of trouble, but she doesn't listen to my podcast as far as I know. In fact, every time I go to the writer's group and they're asking why my career has it, and they're like, well, why don't you do, you know, you should do a web series. What about a podcast? They say all these things that I do. And I'm like, I do all those things. And I remind them all the time that I do them. And then they forget. And then they say, I don't understand why you're not a more successful actor. Maybe you should consider doing a web series or doing a podcast. It's like vicious cycle. Just it, maybe if you looked at it, And then it would stick in your head that I do it. I'm not even asking you to look at it. Anyway, I'm getting mad at these people for no reason. But the point is I lied. I lied. So if she listens to this, then I'll get in trouble and she can out me at the writer's group. And that would actually make me happy, because then I would know that somebody listens to this, even if it gets me in a shitload of trouble. So anyway, I lied. But the whole thing is this. It was just kind of a serendipitous thing going to Disneyland. And I've only been to Disney theme parks like 6 or 7 times in my life. I'm not one of these people. I don't understand the people who go every week. Once, in fact, this trip came only a year and a half after my last time at Disneyland. And before that, there was more than a decade since I'd gone to Disneyland. And that's the way it was when I grew up. I got to go 3 times when I was a kid. Three times. Down to Disney World in Florida, because I was an East Coaster. And that's a lot, because that's goddamn expensive, especially if you live in Massachusetts. Your parents got to pay for a family to fly down to Florida, and then you got to stay in a hotel if you spend more than one day at the park, blah, 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 blah. So it's an expensive thing. But, you know, of course, I know a lot of people who go to Disneyland twice a year, or Disney World twice a year, or they go to Disney World once, and then the Disneyland the other time. Just people with way too much money who are doing that. And if you go to Disneyland, Disney World every week because you live in the area, how can it stay special, you know? And it's just kind of weird if you're like, oh, I'm going down to Disneyland this week because there's a Mickey Mouse, you know, treasure hunt or something, and then you know you'll get like free stuff if we do the Mickey Mouse treasure hunt. I don't know, you guys. Or there's like, oh hey, we're running Space Mountain backwards this week, so we gotta go. You know, it's just like, if you go that much, it's not special, you know. And the 2 times I've been with my son, very special stuff. We first took him when he was 6. It was his 6th birthday, and this past Monday it was his best buddy, this little toe-headed kid. He's a fun spirited boy. Some would call him a holy terror, but you know, I love the kid. He's a good kid. Ultimately, he's just kind of a spaz. He's a boy, you know. He's like a boy. He wants to break things, wreck it. He wants to wreck it. And that's fine. That's the way boys are. That's good. But it was his birthday party, and his 2 moms invited Colby, my son, to go with them. And they paid for his ticket. Very generous. Tickets to Disneyland these days are $80. $80. But then my wife decided, well, she didn't, you know, she kind of wanted to go because it was special to go to Disneyland with Colby and his friend, even though we only went a year and a half ago. And so she took the day off, took a personal day. And I was going to go if I didn't have auditions. If I have auditions, I have to go on auditions, because it doesn't make sense to turn down auditions, which is the only potential way for me to make money, to spend $150 on myself alone going to Disneyland. That's crazy. But that weekend, my son Colby got sick. He had a fever. And he was heartbroken. We're like, well, if you have a fever, you cannot go to Disneyland. So we called his buddy's parents, and we said, you know, we're sorry. Do you want us to give you the ticket and you can find somebody else to go because he's sick? And they're like, no, we don't want anyone. If he can't go, we'll just eat the ticket. We want Colby, because they really like him, and their son obviously does. They're best friends. So their son was heartbroken. Colby's heartbroken. Everybody's sad. And you know, I didn't have auditions, so I was like, well, I would have gone, but then part of me was like, well, probably now we're saving money on 2 Disney tickets, so that's probably good. But as it turns out, next morning he wakes up, fever's gone. We took his temperature 3-4 times, the hard way, not the easy way, if you know what I'm saying, to get the most accurate results. He was fine. So we rallied, we got in the car, we drove to Disneyland, and which is a bitch of a commute, cause of rush hour. But we got there right after the park opened, parked our car. We went in, we got in line cause my wife and I, we had a ticket for him. But my wife and I needed to spend our $80 a piece, on our tickets. Got in line. This kid comes up to me, high school kid, and says, "Hey, do you want a free ticket?" And it was bizarre. I know you never look a gift horse in the mouth, or I don't know the saying, whatever it is, gift whore in the ass, whatever it is. If someone comes up, but someone came up with this thing was worth $80, you know, and was like, "Hey, do you want this free ticket?" And I looked at him like, is this some kind of scam? You know, that was my immediate response, because I'm a cynical dick, was not this kid is just being generous and giving something he doesn't need to somebody who's to save them money. He was, I thought, you know, immediately he's going to probably try to kill my whole family somehow. But then he explained that he was there on a school trip. And the school had paid for all the free tickets, but he had one of those season passes because his family's crazy and they go all the time. But he didn't need his complimentary ticket, so he gave it to us. So great. We only paid for one ticket to get into the park. I mean, all told, we probably spent that day and we got a fancy dinner too, because they have that restaurant in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, and I'd never eaten there. I always wanted to ever since I was a little kid, and I was like, I didn't spend money on the ticket, so now I'm going to blow it on this overpriced dinner just in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, which was awesome. So all told, we probably spent $250 on this trip to Disneyland, whereas when we took him when we were 6, because we were paying for parking, we didn't have to pay for parking this time because we had the ticket that was bought in advance, and we didn't pay for one of our 2 tickets, adult tickets, that we needed to get in. We spent $250 this time, but when the last time we went, probably like $600, you know, because you it costs $300 just to walk through the damn door. And then, you know, you spend a massive amount of money on food. Probably wasn't $600, probably more like $450 or something crazy like that. But still, like, spending almost $500 on a day, that's insane. That is insane. This is another reason I don't go. And I know you can buy the tickets, the season passes, where it's like $300 a year. But I honestly, to me, that's crazy, because I don't want to go to Disneyland that much, because I want it to be special every time. You know what I mean? In any event, so that seemed all serendipitous. And then we went into the park and we had a good time. And because there were adults, I got to ride on some of the roller coasters that my son is too afraid still to ride. So that was fun. But the highlight of the day was, there was this, stage show, it's a Star Wars thing, and it's outside, but you know, it's a show, and there's a stage and all these people dressed up like Jedis who are dancers, and they jump around with lightsabers and do sword fighting, and it's cool. And then they invite like certain kids in the audience to come up and train to be Jedis. And this is the thing that Colby's buddy had done the last time he went. He's like, "Oh, we got to do this. I cannot stand amusement park stage shows. I don't like it. I didn't want to go. I tried to talk him out of it, but it was his trip and his buddy's trip. It was his birthday. So what were we going to do?" And they had waited for us. We went on roller coasters they were too afraid of, and so they would wait and hang out. And so we had to sit through this thing because, you know, they're the kids, and that's why we were there. At one point, my wife, because we were having fun too, but at one point, my wife was like, this is ridiculous. We're, you know, we got to go to the show with them. We can't talk about them. They're here. This is Disneyland's for the children. It's for the children. So you suck it up and you go. And I'm super glad we did. Because even though they got their spots before the show and they wanted to wait 25 minutes. And so a couple of us grownups, because a couple of the grownups were done with rides because they were starting to feel queasy at that point in the day. So they stayed with the kids. A couple of us snuck off and rode on that Matterhorn thing with the Yeti in there. It's like a kind of slow moving roller. It's amusing, whatever. And we got back, you know, because that was the other thing that was great, because it was cold and it was an off day. There were no lines. Okay. Not no lines, but by comparison, I mean, I think the longest we waited for a ride was 15 minutes. And normally on a high volume day or even a medium day, you're waiting at least 40 minutes per ride. So, I mean, within an hour of being in the park, we'd ridden on five of those kiddie rides, you know, Peter Pan and Mr. Toad's Wild Ride and the scary Snow White and the Pinocchio. We had done all those within an hour. That was great. That's what I'm talking about. We were meant to go to Disneyland, and it was special, and I don't want to go back for at least a couple of years, because there's no way it's going to live up to the way this day went. In any event, we all were at the Star Wars thing, and that started, and Colby and his buddy both got picked to go on stage and learn how to do lightsaber stuff. So they all get their prop lightsabers and they're learning their moves. And he was so happy and fun. I mean, he was taking it seriously. He's seven. To him, it was like, that's what was so neat about it. I mean, to him, he kind of knows it's a show. I mean, it's like at seven, you know, it's a show, but because of the audience participation element, he just got lost in it, and he was training to be a Jedi. He was totally serious because he gets lost in these Star Wars cartoons. He's very excited about them. So he's super excited about training to be a Jedi, and he's doing all his moves and stuff. And then after they train for a while, there's an invasion. Darth Vader and Darth Maul show up with a couple of stormtroopers. This is like, the stage opens up and they come up from an elevator in a giant sort of, space base. And they come out and they're like, come to the dark side. And then the kids fight either Vader or Darth Maul, who've been chosen to be a part of the show. And Colby and his buddy both got to do Darth Vader. Darth Maul was off the stage fighting in front of the stage, and Darth Vader was on the stage. And so my kid and his buddy got to fight Vader, which was so cool. And he got up there and he was so focused and you know, I could tell he was really intimidated, because this is a life-size Vader standing in front of him. I can't imagine what that is like for a seven-year-old to, oh gosh, this guy, I mean, Darth Vader's a genocidal maniac, you guys. He killed millions of people, millions, star systems, blows up planets. He's evil as evil can be, as far as fiction is concerned, as well as reality. So he's standing and he's so serious, and he did his moves and it was awesome. And then his buddy came after him and he did his moves, and he had done it before, and the guy who was running the show could kind of tell that he was a little more comfortable. So he had the stormtroopers come at my son's friend, so my son's friend could use the force to push them back. It was so funny. But when there was, and you know, there were a lot of amusing things with kids, because kids are just kind of funny, especially when their dreams are coming true. When you see them living in the moment of a dream come true, it's just, I don't know, it's something special. But when Colby got chosen, you know, and his face lit up, and he went out and then immediately was nervous and wanted to get everything right. And I got a little choked up. And then when he stood there and Darth Vader was yelling at him and he held his lightsaber up and he was all serious about it, I got so verklempt. It was so verklempt. I was so watching, and I know it's just a show and it's silly, but watching his dreams come true a dream come true, like something he's fantasized about, like fighting the bad guys in that way. Just, I don't know. It was just one of the most touching things. I guess that's what a parent wants. That's all a parent wants is for his kid to be happy. And you want them to grow up and find happiness. And so many of us don't. And a lot of us have parents who are neglectful and don't feel that way. But if you're a good parent, or at least a parent who's trying, you know, I'm not saying I'm the best parent. I do my best. And I care and I try. And that's sort of what I'm saying. And it just choked me up. It really choked me up. It was, I don't know. It was just amazing to see him standing and holding that lightsaber. So part of me was like, oh God, I'm raising a nerd. But another part of me was like, this is just great. This is just great. And I realized, and I wrote about this, you know, on my blog, if you want to I read it. I have a WordPress blog, but I realize, you know, this is why there is a Disney, because it is a form of instant gratification for parents to see their kids light up. The same reason people, non-religious people like me, celebrate Christmas and do the Santa Claus thing is because it's so nice to see a kid's face light up. And we don't spoil him too much. So on those days when we do, his face lights up. I think if you do it too often, if you go to Disney every week, then their faces aren't going to light up like that. If you celebrated Christmas every month, their faces wouldn't light up. If you're constantly giving your children money for nothing and gifts for nothing, their faces don't light up when you do. And that's why going to Disneyland only once in a while, just a few times throughout childhood, makes it better because the faces light up. And to have him have a dream of his come true, to be the star, you know, to be the guy who fought the bad guy. I don't know. Super special. I'm being sentimental now and I apologize, but it was super special. And then the only moment of that day that beat it, and there was a lot of great stuff. The first time we went, Pirates of the Caribbean wasn't open. So he got to go this time on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. And he was terrified to do it because he heard that there was, you know, a couple waterfalls that the boats go down. They're not, you know, if you're little, they can be kind of scary. But he got up the courage and talked his buddy into it, who was even more afraid of it. And they went on it and they loved it. And Colby actually elected to go on it again at the end of the day before we left. So we did that one twice. And it was nice to go on that ride again. I mean, I got to say the Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean, to me, they hold up. They're fun. The production value of these rides really is unmatched, and they're just fun. They're fun. You feel the childlike wonder as an adult, especially if you are with a kid. I'm sure that the adults who go all the time who don't have children kind of are living that nostalgic feeling over and over again to some degree, but it's, and that's fine. If I don't judge you, but you might want to try, I don't know, getting laid, because that's really better than Space Mountain, you guys. But by far the best part of the day for me was getting home 2 hours past his bedtime. He's got to go to bed and get up to school in the morning, you know, so bad parenting there, but it was only once. But we got home and he fell asleep on the ride home, of course. We got home about 9 o'clock and he was asleep in the back seat, and I got to, you know, pick him up and carry him inside. And he did that thing where, you know, he's tired and mostly asleep and kind of squeezes his arms and legs around me because it's cold out. It was cold out. And he's just getting a little tighter and a little warmer, and buries his little head into my neck. And I love that feeling. And part of it is that I remember that feeling from his perspective when I was a kid with my dad, when he carried me in after an amazing day of something. That was the best part of the day. And that is the moment that I doubt I will ever forget. All right. Toncast.